Before we delve into the details of the exhortation that Paul gives to Timothy, I want us to spend some time looking at the nature of the relationship that Paul has with Timothy as outlined in this text. It is one that is like a father to a son, like a big brother to a younger brother, like a mentor to a protege. It's by all appearances a very close relationship marked by mutual affection and mutual respect. Paul says to Timothy in the letter, "I long to see you so that I may be filled with joy." So even though Paul is in the role of the mentor, the role of the big brother, he derives joy from his relationship with Timothy. Now with that, I want to put before you a principle that I suspect you'll know is true from your personal experience. And the principle is this, that our relationship strength improves performance. Our strength within relationships improves our performance. As a young person, 6, 7 years of age, all the way through my late teens, playing on sports teams, I look back and my best years as an athlete, whatever the sport, was linked to my relationship with my coach. The better relationship I had with my coach, the better my performance was on the field or the court or the ice. All of us have been to school, and probably it's true for you that your best years in school, probably your best marks in school, came when you had an outstanding relationship with your teacher. For I'm thinking of the musicians among us this morning, and probably your best years learning a musical instrument or spending time in the choir, your best years likely occurred when you had a great relationship with your music director or the instructor for that particular instrument. We think of those who are currently in the workplace, and I often engage people in conversation about how their work is going. Rarely do I ever hear people say, "I don't like my work. I don't like my work." I rarely hear that. What I hear instead sometimes is, "I don't like my job, and the reason I don't like my job is because I have a strained relationship with someone at work, usually a supervisor or maybe the employer." But very few of us are engaged in work that we don't like. We enjoy the work, but if it goes south, it is likely to do with a relationship that we have with someone we're accountable to. So we look at 2 Timothy this morning, we look at this letter from Paul to Timothy, and we see Paul investing in a relationship that Timothy receives with gratitude, and it helps him. It helps his performance as a Christian missionary in the world that's seeing the early church come into full bloom. Why do I share this principle? Relationship strength translates into improved performance. I bring this principle to your attention because I think it translates when it comes to our spiritual growth. We've been talking since the early fall about connect, grow, impact, and presumably we all agree that we need to be connected to God and one another and growing in that relationship. And so as we seek to grow in our faith, grow in our relationship with Jesus, we're probably not surprised to hear that our relationships with one another can help that growth or it can hinder that growth. To put it another way, my spiritual progress, the spiritual progress of Bryn McPhail, is accelerated when I have a Paul in my life, when I have someone in my life who has an interest in my development, who has an interest in my growth, who has an interest in my spiritual progress, when I welcome into my life a Paul, my spiritual growth is accelerated. Conversely, my spiritual progress is slowed when I neglect to engage in a relationship, when I neglect to find a person who can sharpen me spiritually. To put it simply, spiritual progress will be difficult for those who seek to go it alone. Spiritual growth will be difficult, if not altogether impossible, if you seek to go at it alone. I don't mean this morning to set black against white, because probably for most of us, we have seasons. I know that I had colleagues early in my ministry here who were my mentors, who were my Pauls, who were my counselors. But these colleagues moved away to other churches and other regions. And so I found myself for a season to be lacking my Paul, to be lacking a counselor, a mentor, a guide. And so it's probably not true in our life that it's either one or the other. We probably have seasons where we welcome a Paul in and seasons where we'd rather go at it alone. And my encouragement to you this morning is that to find a Paul. Find a Paul. Find someone who you can engage regularly for conversation, for prayer, someone to ask questions about the scripture about, someone to gather with outside of the larger group on Sunday morning. Find a Paul to spur you on. Not only do I want to encourage you this morning to find a Paul, a mentor, a counselor, a guide, but I also want to put before you that you will benefit spiritually, you will grow spiritually if you make yourself a Paul for another. Whether you're a new Christian or a seasoned Christian, surely there is someone who is looking to you, who would relish the opportunity to have you guide them, to have you walk with them and direct them spiritually. Each of us should seek to have a Paul, but each of us should seek to be a Paul. And I don't want us to think that being a Paul is something that will tax us or drain us. For I see in Paul, he says, Timothy, I long to see you so that my joy will be complete. So Paul is giving of himself to Timothy, and it fulfills him. It sharpens him. It brings him joy. I think of parents of young children, and we recognize this very quickly as we're a Paul to our kids. We're parents. We give oversight, counsel to our children. And what we realize very quickly is the need to sharpen ourselves, the need to watch our language, not simply language that's inappropriate, but language that's unduly negative. Parents learn to guard carefully what they say and what they do in the presence of their children. So what they find is that being a Paul, being a mentor to your children, sharpens you, challenges you to be better than you otherwise would seek to be. Friends, I want to encourage you down that road this morning, but I suspect that there are some Christians who won't want a Paul in their life. You know, we use the phrase big brother in our society as a negative thing. We don't want big brother looking out for us. We don't want big brother keeping an eye on us. Friends, when it comes to spiritual things, I want big brother. But I don't want him to be some ominous person out there. I want them to be a real person with close proximity to me. Someone who knows my weaknesses and my strengths. Someone who recognizes potential. Someone who sees pitfalls. I want big brother. I want a Paul in my life. Some of us will resist this, but we do so at our spiritual peril. Now, on the other side of the equation, there will be some Christians who will have an unduly low view of their own spiritual state. They will look in the mirror and think, I can't possibly be a Paul to anyone. I'm just not strong enough. I'm not further along on the road, further enough along on the road. I've made too many mistakes to be a Paul. But this too would be a mistake. For certainly there are those we are connected to who are less far along on the road as we are. Certainly there is someone in our life that you can bring to your mind right now that you could be a Paul to. So what should characterize this relationship? I've said this morning that it's to your spiritual benefit to have a Paul in your life. I've suggested that you would do well to be a Paul for someone. But what will mark this relationship? What will this relationship target? What does Paul want to do with this correspondence to Timothy? Well, quite simply, and we've said it already, Paul wants Timothy to grow spiritually. Paul doesn't want Timothy to stay where he is. He doesn't want his ministry to be a neutral. He doesn't want a stagnation or a complacency to set in. Paul wants for Timothy progress and spiritual growth. Well, if you've been a follower of Jesus for any length of time, you well know that spiritual growth is not an automatic thing. There is no autopilot setting for the Christian. And accordingly, Paul likens our spiritual journey towards growth, he likens it to the process of keeping a fire stoked. A fire, of course, must be attended to. A fire must be fed. Fire must have certain ingredients if it is to continue. If I could share briefly an illustration with you, and I've shared it with some in the past, it was with probably unusual delight that I took in spending $2 a couple years ago for a burn permit at my cottage. And with this $2 permit that I had procured, I was also able to get this steel drum, which along with the other neighbors along our cottage way, we're permitted to burn certain materials. And I took great delight in this, probably way too much delight in burning things. It was an unusual thing for me. And in my experimentation, I noted that certain materials accelerated the fire. They helped the fire to burn bright and strong and hot. Other materials, not so much. As most cottages, we have a lot of trees, and that translates into a lot of leaves on the ground. And every fall, we have to rake up these leaves, and we have to wrap them in a giant tarp. And Allie could tell you all about it. We have to drag it up this long road, and it's quite an arduous exercise. So a light went on one day, and I thought, well, I've got this burn bin here. And so I raked up a pile of leaves and I put a pile on my rake and I dumped it over into my burn bin. But the leaves were a little bit wet. They were a little bit moist and it was a disaster. Not only could you could probably imagine the smoke. People probably thought I was sending a smoke signal, some asking for help. But because the leaves were moist, it practically put my fire out. It extinguished my fire. So I quickly realized that this was not a good idea. Why do I share this ridiculous story with you of me putting wet leaves in my burn bin? I worry that some of us, some of the time, throw wet leaves on our spiritual fire by neglecting to do some very basic things. We throw wet leaves on our spiritual walk when we fail to pray to God. We throw wet leaves on our spiritual development when we neglect to read the Scripture, when we neglect to gather with other Christians for mutual encouragement. There are some basic things that if we don't do them, it is tantamount to pouring wet leaves upon the fire of our faith. I hope you'll want to avoid this. And so let's take our cue from Paul, who counsels us to avoid putting out the flame. Instead, he wants us to fan the flame. He wants us to stoke the fire. And he gives us counsel that can be put into two very basic categories. One, Paul reminds Timothy of the spiritual resources available to him. In other words, the things that will accelerate the fire. Secondly, Paul reminds Timothy of his spiritual priorities. He explains to Timothy why the fire needs to be hot. First, He reminds Timothy of the spiritual resources, saying, "Fan into flame the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of hands." Now, you might want to know that biblical commentators, when you look at this, you're thinking, hopefully, instinctively, what's the gift? What's this gift that Paul gave to Timothy that he needs to fan into flame to help his spiritual growth? Well, the key phrase that commentators pick up on is the phrase, in you. In you. So it's a gift that's in him. And so commentators suggest that the gift is an internal grace rather than an external operation. What I mean by that is that Paul isn't saying to Timothy, fan the flame of this gift, and this gift is something you do. Paul's saying, fan the flame of the gift that is in you. So he's talking about the gift that is in him. So it's something that Timothy is. Paul's talking about character traits. He's talking about character traits, and he calls Timothy away from the character trait of timidity. He calls him away from a spirit of timidity and calls him to tap instead into the resources of divine power, divine love, and self-discipline. The third one, self-discipline in the Greek, literally means to take control of one's mind. So what Paul wants from Timothy is a demonstration of power that exceeds natural limits. It's divine power. He wants Timothy to have a demonstration of a love which exceeds normal limits of love. He wants Timothy to have control of his mind, a level of control that is only possible through divine assistance. I think we can lay these side by side. Our natural inclination and our spiritual abilities. Timidity looks at a situation. Timidity looks at a challenge. Timidity looks at circumstances and says, I can't do it. I can't do this. But the follower of Jesus, who is a stoked fire, says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Friends, no doubt you've been faced by many challenges recently, years past, challenges in your present, right now. And maybe your instinct is to say, I can't do this. But if God has positioned you, if God has put you in this place, that's the spirit of timidity talking. The spirit of Christ says you can do all things not by digging deep. You can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. In the realm of love, timidity says, I can't forgive you. Your insult hurt too much. Your offense was too great. Your harm too extensive. Timidity says, I can't forgive you. But the follower of Jesus who has his fire stoked can say, my love, my affection for you does not depend upon you meeting certain conditions. Friends, you probably have people in your life whose affection and kindness towards you is determined by your performance. Meaning if you perform well, you receive kindness and love in return. That's the spirit of timidity. That's the spirit of natural law. The follower of Jesus does not make love attached conditions. We say, I can't forgive. But the spirit of Christ within us says, my love for you, my affection does not depend upon your performance. The third scenario, controlling one's mind. You've probably come to a situation in your life where a plan was needed. A strategy was required to be put in place. There's a blank canvas that needs your intellectual direction. The spirit of timidity says, I don't know what to do here. But the follower of Jesus, who has their fire stoked, reminds themselves, I have the mind of Christ. That's what Paul says elsewhere. We possess Christian people, possessed by the Spirit of God, the mind of Christ. So when we find ourselves in a complex situation, timidity throws up our arms and says, I don't know what to do. You take the lead. I'm not sure. But the follower of Christ, who has their fire stoked, reminds themselves that they have the mind of Christ. Friends, I simply want to remind you this morning of what Paul reminded Timothy. We have spiritual resources. We have divine love, divine power. We have the mind of Christ. And what to what end do we use this? Paul calls us to a holy life. Well, what does that mean? Paul's calling us to spiritual growth. The way to spiritual growth is not an automatic thing. It's a thing that requires us engaging the power of Christ, the love of Christ, and the mind of Christ. And in those resources given to us, we grow. But it's also to another end, what Paul calls suffering for the gospel. We could translate this to sacrificing for the gospel. And we see that spiritual growth isn't simply about me and Jesus. The first part is divine love, power, and in the mind of Christ, resourced for my own benefit. But then Paul suggests it's also used for the greater good, that we sacrifice ourselves for the sake of the gospel. And to do this well, we need help. What I wouldn't want anyone here to do is to think that we go at this alone. We not only need the internal resource of God's Spirit, but we need the external resource of God's people. And that's why we stress being here Sunday after Sunday. Because we need you. We are less than what we could be if you weren't here. Your presence makes a difference. Some of you might even be a pull to someone else and not even know it. And that when you're not here, someone's missing their Paul. Someone's missing their encourager, their guide. We need the internal strength of the Spirit. We need the external encouragement that comes from God's people. I want to share one last illustration, again from cottage life, that relates to fire. In the wintertime, when Allie and I are at the cottage, our cabin is heated entirely by the fireplace. And this is, for those of you who have fireplaces in your home or cottage, it's such a wonderful, peaceful thing. But when it's your only source of heat, there are certain elements that you have to carefully manage, and that is the temperature of the room. So we go to bed at night, say 11 at night, and the temperature of the cabin is 75 degrees, which is a bit warm. But it's nighttime. We're not going to be awake, presumably, until 7 a.m. And we wake up at 7 a.m. on those cold winter days, and the temperature is dropped to 60 or to 58. And we wake up, and everyone's complaining about how cold it is, how frigid it is. We're reaching for sweaters and blankets, and we're miserable. Why? Because we didn't stoke the fire. You see, what it takes for Allie and I to stay warm at our cottage in the middle of winter is that one of us needs to wake up at 3 a.m. Somebody needs to get up at 3 a.m., put two logs in the fire, push them around, stoke the fire, and if someone does this, we wake up toasty, warm, and happy. But that comfortable position comes at the cost of sacrifice. And more often than not, one of Allie or myself does this. We wake up, we program ourselves to wake up at 3 or 4 a.m. because the cost isn't so great when we realize what we gain. Friends, what I'm trying to say this morning is that whatever trouble it is to grow spiritually, whatever effort is required to pray more, to read more, to fellowship more, whatever needs to be cut out of your life to make room for more spiritual stuff, whatever sacrifice, it's worth it. It's worth it. My most content days as a Christian always follow days of sacrifice, days of great toil and effort. We have all the resources of God, all the resources of His people, and if we sacrifice, if we give something up, we will be blessed, fulfilled, satisfied, and we will feel ready to be a call to another and to seek out a call for ourselves. May that be true in your life. Amen.